This is, let's see, Fight in the Fields, Paradigm Productions, and it's Sound Roll 64, and interviewing Al Rojas in Sacramento at 12496. It's Sound Roll 64, Camera Roll 134, Camera Roll 134, and Take 4, Al Rojas.
Okay, you have speed.
Okay, this is take four, marker.
Okay, Al, give me that story about the conversation with Caesar in the car.
Well, I worked with Cesar, for about a year, and I pleaded with him that I wanted to work with him. He said no, but he finally gave in. And I went with him on trips with a stack of papers of, writing letters. One time he got pissed off at me because I was supposed to write a letter to Jack Henny. He had told me, write this letter, and he said, tell him to, go dump it, in bad vulgar terms, and I never wrote it. But anyway, in that conversation, we were talking about heroes in the car, and he had always had a way of twirling. In the conversation with Cesar, in the car, we went to got into a discussion about heroes and about people, after the fact. And I said to him, one of these days they're probably going to be naming parks after you or something. He says, Albert. He said he always had a way of twirling his hair and kind of. He said, Albert. He says, let me tell you one thing. He says, the only thing I want people to do is stop the grapes. He says, if they start making statues. For me, he says, and I know statues are only for pigeons to shit on. I said, that's the worst thing I want to see happen. I want them to stop the grapes, That's what I want. So we just, we were just kidding around, but that's basically what happened, yeah.
When you were telling me the story before, you said they're going to name a statue after you. Tell me the story one more time and say they're going to name a statue after you, because that way the story works better.
Oh, I said they're gonna name a statue after you probably. He says Albert. He says the only thing statues are good for is for pigeons to shit on. That's all it's good for. Now that's the worst thing that I want is to turn over my grave if that were to happen. Yeah.
So, you worked with it very closely for that year, but you worked for the union for 10 years, and there were some ups and downs. But Caesar was a very complicated guy, wasn't he?
During the time that I got to work with him closely, I saw him as, we worked, real late at night in the evening. He worked really hard. And there were times there where, he's kind of comical in a way, or incidents that happened. One time he got upset at me because he had asked me about Susan Drake and why isn't she putting out this work and, these letters have to go out and what are you doing, get her to do it. I said, well, she's on the phone talking to everybody. He says, well, take the phone away from her. I said, what do you mean, take the phones? He says, yeah, take it away from her. Take the phones away from her. I'm going to lunch. I'll be back. I hope you take care of this right away. I said, what's that? What am I going to do? So I went over and told Susan, you got to stop. You got to do your work. No more telephones. So Caesar came back after she went to lunch, and then Caesar said, did you take care of the phone problem? I says, well, I talked to her. No, I said, did you take care of the phone problem? I says, you mean the phones? Yeah. He says, no. He says, she wants her phones. First time I saw him angry. He says, let me show you how to take care of this problem. So he went over to her office, got on his all four knees and his knees, crawled under the table and pulled the wires off the off the wall and the wrapped up the telephones, all four of them, and he handed them to me and he gave them to me. He said, here, when she comes in, tell her that you took them off the wall. I said, whoa.
I mean,
so that was it.
He sort of tough when he wanted to. He had a whole bunch of different faces that he showed to different people.
Oh, yeah. He I mean, he was very, you know, meticulous about walking the grounds. And he knew what equipment was on the grounds or what tools were on the ground. We'd take a walk around La Paz and check the water, and we'd check the electrical units and check the auto shop and check things like that. And one time he had me call in one of the mechanics because we were losing some equipment. And I had never seen him really zero in on getting the truth out of someone like he did. He'd sit there and look at you like he was looking right through you. And this guy just spilled the beans. He just couldn't deal with it. And he said, yeah, I went and sold it. And said, Albert fixed him his paper, his paycheck. He's gone. Give him a bus ticket. That's it. You're gone. Fired. Gone. But he was a real, you know, we were all, you know, very loyal to him. We were extremely loyal to him. You know, we felt a lot of loyalty to him. We looked at him like he was almost like God, you know, just like we'd do anything. It was like, I mean, we'd go out to fields or there's, you know, maybe some growers and that were armed with guns or rifles, and that didn't bother us. We felt like, you know, he was a man that instilled a lot of courage and belief in that we could do something and we could achieve, you know, building this union. And we did when we won the boycott in 70, and we came back to the 150 growers. That was a tremendous amount of power. When we had well over or close to 100,000, you know, farm workers under a union contract. So he's a tough man to work for. And I remember, this is prior to going out on the boycott, this is when we were in Lamont, and Mac Lyons, the only African-American that, you know, we had that was taking care of a hiring hall, which is to Georgia. And Cesar had assigned me under Marshall Gans to supervise the freight cars and the railroad box cars, the routes and destination points of all of Jamara's grapes that were being shipped out and other growers during the winter season. And of course, I, you know, was a coordinator. I went out and jumped in with the organizers, and I was crawling around and in the stockyards and the railroad yards, the whole scene. But one day he called the Lamont office and he didn't find me there. Left message, tell Albert I want to see him, to come back to Delano. So I went back to Delano, and this was at the Pink House. And I was a bit nervous because I knew more or less what he wanted me, you know, for. So I walked into his office. He was like, it was the bedroom, one of the bedrooms in this Pink House, we call it. It's a regular track house. He said, Albert, he says, I'm going to ask you some questions. Do you believe you're an organizer? I said, yes. Do you believe you're a leader? I said, yes. Do you believe that in what you're doing? Yes. Then what the hell are you doing out in the produce yards and the stock yards and the railroad yards? I says, I'm there with the people. No, he says, I'm a union organizer, I'm a good organizer, and I'm a leader. And if you're a leader and you're an organizer and you're a good organizer, then you lead. Do you want to lead? If you want to lead, then I want to see you at that office so you can deal with delegating responsibility to people. That's a leader. Don't you ever forget that if you want to lead. If you want to lead, that's all I'm going to ask you. Yes. Then you go back to Lamont and you get the job done. And next time I call, you answer that phone. Bingo, man. That was it. That's all I needed. But he was that kind of a guy. Of course, he could always get angry, too. And I think I did one time I disagreed with him. When the boycott was won, and they called us to Chicago, and we had a big meeting at the Wabash Avenue office, boycott office, And there was 180 people there. And Cesar was determined that he was going to close down the boycott operations for cost factor, money. Yet we were the ones that were self-sustaining, and we were picking up and doing fundraising. So I questioned that, and I raised my hand, and I stood up, and I told him straight out. I said, Cesar, we call him Cesar, or we call him Cesar, but this time I call him Cesar. I said, I disagree with you. And man, when I said that, he turned like the real, real dark, you know, ashen color. He was angry. That's when he was angry. And of course, I did it in front of all these people, but I didn't do it, you know, just for doing it. I said, I don't want to go back. I think we need to stay here. You have a strike in Salinas. Those lettuce workers are going to come back, and it's going to be the wintertime. Who's going to train them? We dismantled the boycott now, and all the support that you have and we built for the last 2 years is going to go down the tubes. It's going to be difficult for them to grab momentum again. Mistake. I'm not going back. He says, well, you closed down the operation. Everybody's going back.
You really couldn't argue with him.
No, you couldn't argue with him.
Next up is Al Rojas, take 5. Okay, we're going to Neil Camaro, 135, and Al Rojas, take 5 up.
Somehow, the second time you told it didn't. The question is, why didn't it work out? That's between you and Sarah, for some reason.
I didn't see it. Yes, see.
Okay. Tell me the story one more time about Cesar and driving in the road and that interesting conversation about being famous.
Well, we were in the car, and I was in the back seat, and Cesar was in the front, in the passenger side, and he always had a habit of, when we're talking to him, where he's thinking he's twirling his hair, you know. And something came up about, you know, discussion about heroes and streets, and I said to him, can you imagine one day they're going to probably name streets after you too, you know, and maybe even make a statue of you too. And Cesar said, you know, Albert, I'm going to tell you, he says, the day that happens, I'll turn over my grave, let me tell you. But let me tell you about statues. Statues are only for pigeons to shit on. He says, I'll turn over my grave every day, see that happen. What I want them to do is to stop the graves is what I want. Boycott the graves. That's what I want.
You're one of the many people who went on from the union experience both before and with the farm workers and applied those skills to other settings. You still work with labor unions, you still work with workers. And what did you learn from the farm workers' experience that you've been able to do other things with?
Well, I think that I'm now involved with working with the immigrant, you know, workers, and most of them farm workers, from Mexico, and I'm now involved with working with and with the democracy and human rights issue with the Mexican New Revolution that we call. And I think how I got involved in that is that, in fact, it goes back to, you know, us not knowing what was really happening, what's happening in Mexico with the new migrants or the new farm workers that have come to the valley.
What I'm saying is, did you learn, are there things you learned from being an organizer with the farm workers that you're able to now put into these struggles and other things?
I think, yes. I think that one's able to, how would I say, sense a skill of momentum, and you're drawn to particular situations, and you learn how to link with and work with groups, and identifying what people, you know, you make contact with to begin to make things happen. My involvement with those kinds of skills relate to being able to work with media and trying to get media to to get the message out. Kind of reminds me of what we learned in the boycott. As an example, we wanted to convince a grocery store in downtown Pittsburgh to stop selling grapes. So we didn't know what to do. So we're up at this church diocese office, and over in the corner there was some camera equipment, like old camera equipment, and an old 16-millimeter camera. It was just a shell. And these volunteers of mine, and I got this idea. I said, you, put on that camera. You take a notepad. You wrap this other camera. You carry this camera. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down there to that store. You guys are going to follow up. And what we're going to do is have you come down and interview us while we're picketing. There are people. So that happened. So when the store manager came out and he saw the cameras, he thought they were the television cameras from town and the newspaper reporter from town. So they were interviewing me, my guys. He comes over and shoves me out of the way and says, talk to me. So he's then wanting to be interviewed by our guys. By the time that happens, he calls the police or asks, one of his guys to call the police. But we knew that if he called the police, get on the radio, the news people would pick it up, and then they would show up. And that's exactly what happened. All of a sudden, before you know it, the TV news came out, the real cameras came out, and the real reporters came out. So we learned, and we learned how to deal with the media that way. So.
Rojas, take six up.
I took it, and I think one of the cops took it. They took my belt. I had a real nice belt. They took my hat. But when I was in jail, they were asking for my autograph. They were phone guys.
Okay, there was no more to take on. We did not do a take six on Al Rojas. This end of the interview.